For October the 14th, 2016, we talk about Swing Vote Go, Layers of Fear, and we ask you which games you bounced off of before coming to love them completely. Welcome to Level 169. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jala Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Guys, there's tiredness in the air. I'm losing my mind. Jala, I know that you're very tired as well. It's a busy time.
That it is.
Yeah.
And I woke up at 2-something in the morning to go run hills, and I got rained on. So my day started like that, but that's okay.
Yeah.
So I've got other things that have been going on, which is exciting news.
Yeah.
For example, Duck Waddle has completed the Marathon Challenge.
Awesome.
All 3,521 miles. They are all knocked out, and it's not me, really. It's mostly, let's see, Ollie,
like
Richard, Trevor, and David. No, it's not half me. But anyway, yeah, everybody did a great job on that. So we knocked it out in like, you know, no time. So that's pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then I have to report in about Instigator because, you know, that was that title a couple of times back.
Yeah.
It's real, dudes. It's real. Real thing.
Is it like like one of those dinosaur pills that you put in water and then it blows up into a gator?
No, it's an Instigator ranch in Louisiana that Jeremy offered to go visit for me in my stead. And I was like, but I need to be there to witness this awesome thing by, you know, like in person by myself. But he said he would go and take a look at it for me sometime. Also, I furthermore went to the state park on the weekend and I posted pictures of a baby gator on Instagram. So therefore I have Instigator.
All right. So how about this? Everybody, if you have an Instagram, why don't you post a picture of a gator with, and Gator Golf can apply for this as well, with the hashtag Instigator, hashtag Level Podcast. There we go.
Yay.
Yeah.
Oh, and then, too, when I was looking for, because I signed up for a trail race for next year, and they have things called gaiters, which keep rocks and stuff out of your shoes. And I found one that has alligators on it. It's Gator Gators.
Precursor Gators. I gotcha.
It's the best ever.
I think it's a little
makes
bit
me so happy.
It's a little bit unseemly. So when they talk about this being a gator ranch and hatchery, I don't know what I think ranch means. I think that in my head, what I would like this to be is a gator zoo. What I don't want to see below the picture of the cute, you know, kind of baby alligators, is listings for sales of alligator skin leather dress belts, wallets, and other wallets.
Yeah. Well, on one more happy note, let's just like move away from that very quickly.
Let's be fair though. If they had thumbs, they would do it to us too.
That's true. Totally. Absolutely.
Oh God.
So anyway.
I just thought of alligators with thumbs, and it's terrifying.
Yep.
So the last little bit of news, because I have various things to say, is that I set up my donation page for the Houston Marathon in January. I am actually running in honor of my grandmother to raise awareness and money also for Alzheimer's Association. My grandmother had Alzheimer's, and it was really rough watching her because she lived like less than a mile from my house for most of my life. And so to see her, you know, going down, and then just how scary and rough that was for her and everybody else involved, you know, was really rough. So that's what I chose to raise money for. That's the charity that I'm doing. Nice. I've posted links on my Facebook and Twitter to said thing, and again, like it's like a donation page that you can donate to whenever. I also pinned it in the Level Slack channel, so if anybody is interested, or you can just ping me and I'll send you a link to it.
I'll put a link in the show notes as well. Actually, can you slam jam that on the Facebook too?
Sure, will do.
Yeah. Neat. Well, that is a fantastic cause to run for. When did you say the marathon was?
The marathon itself is actually not until January. It is January 15th. Hmm. So
the only time when humans can exist in Houston, as I understand.
Well, they just sent out the information about making a page, and because the holidays are coming and everybody's forking over money for everything during the holiday season. Like, I want to go ahead and make my page and put it out there now so people have, like, time and they have, you know, the ability to, you know, pitch in whatever they feel inclined to pitch in if they do. Or, you know, just sharing the link is awesome, too. Like, whatever you can do. So I set my goal at, like, $500, but, you know, whatever.
Nice.
If I can get over that, I will totally be happy. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, that is all really cool stuff.
Except for the purses and the...
Yeah, I was trying to move past that. Again, you know, that's a preemptive strike, I think.
Damn.
Oh, gosh.
It's okay. I pet the baby gator at the state park, and they have lots of gators there, and they don't sell alligator products. They just have gators everywhere.
They just sell alligator memories.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And actually, that's the place that I'm going to be running my trail runs. So I'm going to be running with alligators and stuff all over the place. Mm. So,
aren't alligators like the nice ones and crocodiles like the terrifying ones?
Yeah, like alligators don't tend to be as violent. And besides which, like most of the time, they just kind of chill out and just sit there. Mm. And then every once in a while, if they're really hungry and there's like a bird, then they're going to be like, oh, I'll. You know,
yeah. Which is the one that will like clamp onto you and then spin so that you die?
I think it's crocodiles. Okay. And they like and they bury you underwater or like put you under a log so that you're like there for food for later.
Yeah, they kind of they pickle you like a black dragon.
Terrifying.
Which is the one that if it's angry, it shits and then spins its tail around to spray it everywhere. That's a hippopotamus. Sorry.
Alligators can do that?
Such a long silence.
So I think really that so Michael in the Slack this week was talking about how we should pick a level mascot based on a Magic the Gathering card called the Leveler, but I really think we should just make it alligators.
Right. This shit is terrifying.
I mean, they are very scary. They're basically living fossils, right? They haven't evolved because they're just like apex all the way. I mean, except for speedboats.
When you're perfect, you don't need to evolve.
Right. Nothing I've been doing is as exciting as that. I designed a poster board for the PRGE show.
Yay!
That's cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Since we're doing Pokemon Yellow, I wanted a way to keep track of all the Mons people had caught and the ones that were still out there. So I took all 150 of them and I laid them out in a grid and I did like a nice little background and I made a little thermometer. It took the entire presidential debate to do it.
Well, that's at least
that
something productive
way
you can do.
Spent.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
so quarter to third Mons. Yeah.
I mean, you can only catch a little bit more than a quarter to a third of the Mons, just because Yellow doesn't have all of them. So it's a little anticlimactic. It was like, okay, do we make the goal 150 and just kind of like fall short of it? Or do we say like 136? Like, hey, got to catch all 136, which is patently untrue, at least from a marketing standpoint.
How many can they catch in Yellow? Is it 136 the total number?
Yeah, 136.
Okay.
Yep. Fortunately, you can't catch Magmar with his weird shitty forehead either. So that's good.
Magmar is so weird.
I hate Magmar.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Magmar's parents should have left him at the fire station, ironically. I mean, you know, just so he could be raised not to be such a miscreant, you know, actually get in with some people as opposed to being just the piece of shit that he is. Fucking Magmar.
I was going to say, at least some good came out of the debate, but I don't know. With all this Magmar hate, maybe not.
Yeah, right?
I had to look at his stupid face and make sure his feet were on the exact same pixel line as everybody else while maintaining the relative height of the sprite because I'm not gonna be a chump who walks into this place full of people who know retro games and have my Caterpie be a couple of pixels off. Thank you very much.
Because you know you would get called on it.
Yeah, no, people are just. I mean, yeah, you've ever done that, right? Like you have something you're really proud of, and there's like a little incidental like misspelling in the email that you send out, and that's all anybody will say. The lights are twinkling, Clark.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that's what's up here. How about you, Dennis?
Nothing special. Milo's teething, so I am not sleeping.
Oh.
Because no. He is not sleeping.
Jesus.
So that's kid. Been fun. But he'll be through it. Yeah. He's very angry, and that's very cute, which is sad. Oh. So there's all the emotions jumbled in there. That's but it'll be good soon enough.
Nice. Ben, how about you?
Not much for this week. It's been a typical work week, but I have a staycation. I have some friends coming over into town at the end of this weekend, so it'll be fun. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, with that business adjourned, why don't we go and do the regular kind of show? You know, the brief, the multiplayer, the grind. Does that sound good?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it. So let's start with the brief, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Jala, you have one that is timely and topical, so go ahead with that first.
Indeed. I actually have something that is timely, topical, and applicable, and oh my god, it's like I never have one of those, ever. Okay. So, Swing Voter Go is an election video game made by MoveOn.org to help people who are not in swing states feel empowered, like their vote makes a difference. So using social media integration, we're talking like Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, LinkedIn, to pull your friends lists. It shows you what friends live in swing states and offers you non-confrontational means of approaching them about the election, like memes, talking points, conversation starters, that kind of stuff. So basically it helps you figure out how to canvass your friends and family because they are more likely to pay attention to you than some random stranger. So that's more effective than, you know, like somebody random going to your door and knocking on it and bugging you.
Yeah.
So you're asked to report back on the success of these methods in order to improve the overall canvassing techniques that they're offering. The game mechanic is, of course, to swing a vote. And the article says, and I'm quoting the article, something magical happens in your personal profile section when you succeed. Okay.
Okay. Like, does Peter Molyneux put me in his next game?
Right. I don't know. Anyway, it's literally, I looked it up. It's not actually an app. I thought it was going to be like a phone app or something, but it's a swingvotergo.com. And some other statistics and stuff. 62% of the population gets their news from social media, and that number is higher among millennials. And if somebody sees that a personal friend or family member is voting, they are 6 times more likely to vote. So that's kind of the idea behind using the social network to do that, to try to canvass people and talk to them. And although MoveOn.org is a left-leaning organization that is rooting for Clinton, they are aware that, you know, Trump voters can totally use the same page and then just go, okay, well, now we're going to do this, but for Trump. You know?
The meme they share is Pepe.
Yeah, well, the whole point of this game is to get people involved and get them out to vote and get them feeling like, you know, not being apathetic about the entire process, you know, like getting out there and actually trying to make whatever difference they can make, however it is that they can do that.
Yeah.
So
do they support third parties as well?
I don't know. I pulled up the page, but it has been a very busy day. I have not had time to fiddle with it, but like I want to mess with it a little bit after the show, but I'm not going to be messing with it till after the show. Yeah, yeah. So
I'd be curious to know. Yeah,
there was like a Republican adver game last election that was just a little platformer about, like, you know. It didn't have any like actual real world application like this. It was just a chance to like jump on corrupt politicians or something like that, Mario style. Because really, that's what Goombas are corrupt politicians. I don't know. It's deep in the lore. Yeah,
they're not magic chestnuts. Well, I mean, every enemy in block is a converted or a transformed member of the Mushroom Kingdom. Like, one could assume that those were the corrupt chancellors and, you know, councilmen.
Yeah. But yeah, so this is not new, but it certainly feels like the most well thought out, like, real world application for it.
At least has hooks into something that would actually, like, you know, because by God, who's ever going to hear about the election? that's a stat. I wonder how. So if 6 times more people vote, I wonder how many times more people say they voted.
Yeah,
because I think you can buy those stickers.
That's ridiculous.
I'm positive that because of where this comes from, people are going to say, oh, this is a partisan thing. It's an anti-Trump game, etc. But, like, low turnout, like, this is probably going to be one of the lowest turnout elections we have. Honestly, for as much, like, heat and fervor as there is about it, like people not turning up is a problem for both of them as Trump's campaign turns into a circus tornado. And, well, I mean, reveals itself to be a circus tornado.
Yeah.
and as people get complacent about it, like, for fuck's sake, vote. God damn it, please.
Yeah.
Yeah, get out there. And if you, like, we're recording this on the final day to register in several states. But
right.
If you're listening to this in any states where you still can, no matter what you think, go out and vote.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
PSA over.
So, Jala, when you shared this link, I initially thought it was going to be a game on Steam called Mr. President! ! Which appears to be
that is a game on Steam right now that I came across.
I don't know. Maybe it's just because I don't have a sense of humor. Whatever. It kind of seems to be in poor taste. So the idea is. Yep. You are Trump's bodyguard, because it's obviously assumed that he's going to be the president, and somebody is attempting to assassinate him via sniper rifle. You play as Dick, quote, Rock Hard Johnson, the bulletproof man, and so you have to run and then leap in front of Trump in the line of fire style in a bunch of different scenarios. And it looks like sub Goat Simulator level kind of thing. I don't quite know what to think of it, honestly.
Sounds like a Newgrounds game.
It really does. I'm more in line with something that came up on a search for president. There's a game on Steam called Cat President, which is a visual novel featuring photos of cats. You can play as Frisky, Dr. Nom Nom's Thunderpaw, Kale, Rover, or DJ Nibbles. It is the tagline is "Find love in a world where cats run the U.S. government." Oh, the subtitle is "A more perfect union." That is Cat President.
There's some slick Hateo Portal boyfriend, but with cats and presidents.
Yep.
All right.
It's actually
there was
were the pigeons president in Hatful?
No.
Well, that's interesting. So it's called Swing the Vote is the name of the game that you talked about.
Swing Voter Go. It's based on the kind of idea of Pokemon Go.
Okay, Swing Voter Go to the polls.
Yep. Exactly.
Dennis, what you got?
Yeah, so maybe following the tradition of people who aren't typically using games for a certain purpose. You've got the politicians on one side, and my story is about children on the other side.
What's the difference?
There's a difference.
Okay. set in spike. But no, there's a new game, and it's kind of part physical toy and part app coming out called Bloxels, BLOXELS. That is essentially like a pixel art builder / scanner for kids. So the toy piece of this is just it looks like maybe a 16 by 16 grid. And lots of colored cubes of, you know, your green, orange, pink, blue, all that stuff, that you can drop into the grid. So it essentially is a pixel art builder in real life. So kids can play with this. Think similar to like a light bright, what you would do to you know, make pictures.
I fucked shit up on a light bright.
Yeah.
in a good way or a bad way?
No, I mean, I enjoyed playing with a light bright when I was a child.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I never had one, and I was so upset because I was poor, and I
You never got to have one? Have you ever played with one?
No. No. I was so upset. I wanted a light bright so bad. Mm-hmm. Sniffles.
They are pretty fun. Well, to continue on that tangent, there was an adult-sized light bright at Luminosity, which is like a concert in Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah.
And it was all water bottles with different dyed water, and then it was just this giant wall with bright lights behind it, and you'd stick the water bottles into the holes, and the light would like shine through that, and so it was really cool. But anyway, yeah, awesome. So you know, giant grid that you kind of drop literal pixels into, I guess, literal physical pixels to make pictures. But then once you've built it, you actually snap a picture on your iPhone or iPad's camera, and it scans that sprite into the game. And so there's kind of your basic, like, hey, you made something, and then there's a digital version of it. But then also the game seems to have some kind of software that will interpret what you've created into like a level design. So if you put down blue pixels, it'll make that as water in the game. Or if you put down yellow pixels, that'll be coins. And a purple pixel is the hero and all that stuff. And so you can kind of build a level. And create a game. Red is lava, obviously. And it seems like you can get fairly elaborate with it, depending on how much time you're willing to put in. Like, you can create something that's fairly well fleshed out, which is really cool. With enough patience, which, God, if kids have anything, it's patience, you could kind of create your own little game, which is cool to see, enabling kids in a very intuitive way to design this.
There's a pretty solid Pikachu sprite on the article.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was made by the guy. Yeah, that was the guy who made the article, created the Pikachu sprite. But
he actually bought it on an online store. So you can like put your creations up on an online store for other people to download. I don't know if you're actually buying them or you're just using in-game currency or what.
It's not a purchase thing. It looked like it was free. Like, the app was free and you just share the levels and stuff on there. I didn't see anything about it being a purchase thing.
Yeah. Like, I imagine it's probably just like a sharing marketplace kind of thing.
He says he spent some coins to purchase another player's Pikachu. Hmm. But that might just be in-game currency, which it's funny because the grid is not that large. And so if you just like sat down and went to the store and looked at the sprite, you could easily go back out into the creator and make it yourself. Right. I mean, hell, you're looking at the sprite on the iPad screen and you've got the little like grid in front of you in real life. So you can literally go one to one and create this thing. No problem. So maybe a little self-defeating. I don't know why they would want you to spend coins on it, but a very cool concept overall.
No, it's really neat.
It's kind of almost like a Little Big Planet light.
Mm-hmm. Or just kind of like providing a nice little kind of abstraction for designing levels and stuff in the game, you know?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, it's like kind of Minecraft-y, too.
The visuals are especially Minecraft-y, like the low-res voxel kind of look.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I can't believe there's not a Steve on this store.
I
guarantee it'll
over.
Fill up with that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure it's in there.
Yeah. No, this is real neat. Ben, how about you? What you got for us?
Yeah, so I got a little weird like cross promotion thing. I'm just pointing out a podcast that I listened to this last week that I thought was really good. So I thought I'd share that as a brief, if that counts.
It does.
So it was a podcast called Designer Notes, which is run on the Idle Thumbs Network. But they had a 3.5 interview with Amy Hennig, who is one of the programmers, I guess, producers at Naughty Dog. And so she worked on the first 3.5 Uncharted games, and she's now working on a Star Wars game over at EA Arts. But she basically just talked about her career and her experience in the video game industry. And so it was just really interesting. The way it was originally pitched to me was, it was talking about how she was talking about how like the work lives of programmers is really tough, and like how you have to work 80 hours a week consistently, you know, for a large majority of your life. That's part of it. But however, like the other interesting part is she talks about kind of like the evolution of the video game industry and like the first games that she worked on back in like the early 90s and the late 80s and stuff. And I think that's just as interesting as well. So yeah, it's a kind of a weird story to share, but
no, it's a good podcast. There's a lot of kind of like crossover, at least listeners, people who listen to us tend to listen to stuff on Idle Thumbs. I don't know how many people listen to things that are not in the kind of main show kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But that is, so the guy who hosts that, I think Soren Johnson, mm-hmm. is he was one of the lead designers behind Civ 4, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't even know that.
Mm-hmm. And the podcast that was kind of the precursor to that, Tone Control, was kind of a short series, was done by not Scott Vanneman. Oh, Steve Gaynor. There we go. That's the name. Steve Gaynor, the guy from the lead designer guy of Gone Home.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then it's a similar kind of interview thing where they got a bunch of people in to talk about it. The headline that this kind of generated on the news sites was that Amy Hennig says that AAA game development isn't worth it.
Yes. Yeah, that was one of the things she was quoted as saying, where they ask if, you know, like, you know, like, would she do it again, I guess, if she had to redo the last 10 years of her life? You know, like, mm-hmm. And again, she said, like, minimum working 80 hours a week, you know, like, doing video game development. She said it probably was not worth it, but she has no regrets at her current point in time. But, yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. Were you aware, Dennis, of, like, Amy Hennig, of her kind of authorial kind of stamp that she had on Uncharted, Naughty Dog kind of stuff?
No, I think I've seen her name before, but I didn't know the extent to which she was involved.
Yeah.
I recognized her from, I think with Uncharted 2, they had like a lot of behind the scenes videos, and she was one of the main people to be interviewed in that. And so I recognized her from that.
But yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like a meat grinder. Anytime you have a job market like that, where there are going to be, you know, tens or hundreds of people behind you who want to be able to do that job, even at the very top. You know, they can use that as leverage.
Yeah. One of the interesting things with, like, I guess with her story is it, you know, like, there's this like weird balancing act where it's like everybody who does is really passionate about what they do. And so like a lot of them are happy to devote that much time to working on that sort of project. But yeah, at the same time, yeah, there's a lot of sacrifice, it sounds like. One of the coolest analogies, I guess this is kind of like a spoiler for the podcast, but one of the favorite things I wanted to share was she made an analogy to what developing a video game was like. And she said it's like putting a puzzle together upside down, where you're like fitting all these pieces together. And about 2 or 3 months before release, you flip the puzzle over and see whether or not there's a good picture there or not, and then try and address that.
Nice.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
Yeah,
it just a lot of developers are going indie, or at least breaking mm-hmm. off into their own stuff. And I wonder if leaving a big studio will actually solve a lot of the problems.
Especially
if you go from being somebody who is primarily given creative control down to also worrying about keeping your business afloat.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
We shall see.
I don't know. But what's that, Jala?
It is mystery.
And then finally here, I've got like a little light story. So if you're at any kind of convention, there's going to be some kind of booth set up where they're going to be demonstrating something on VR, right? You get to see people mm-hmm. standing in the middle of a crowded room, looking around, gawking, with something on their face that was invented by a man who now pays for political memes. But Oculus, the company, has decided to create something to address the hygiene concerns of people like me who would not touch their face with one of those things. I did it once and I will never do it again, but now maybe I will want to do it now because they have invented what they call the Oculus condom. Okay. So VR, the Oculus and VR helmets have little ridges of foam padding around the eyes, and this is the part that will carry the virus that will, you know, rot your eyes out and give you kind of like a very hollow, like Legacy of Kain kind of face. But what this does is it is a small layer of adhesive foam. It's like a ring of adhesive foam that they just kind of like gently and daintily apply around the very edge that would touch your face. Then you have it on there for one play, and then when you're done, you take it off, and then you just peel it, and then you throw it into a vat of boiling water, and then you ship it to the sun. So yes, these Rift condoms are here, and they're meant entirely for trade shows to put reasonable people's minds at ease. And this actually is part of a larger thing. Like, there is a company that just does accessories for VR helmets. And they even have like kind of sleeves that like go over top of the existing foam, so you can just like take it off and wash it, as opposed to just kind of like having it, you know, your face sweat and Rankin this expensive piece of equipment.
And Rankin, that is like the best spell.
Oh, but if you really, really want to do something powerful, you have to do Enranka. Yeah, that's the third level. But yeah, this is barely a thing, but I always appreciate when a company, 4 years too late, recognizes a major thing, because like, you know, you have to put one of these on to experience it, right? And I'm kind of playing up the germophobia angle of this for laughs, but like, you know, if you can make this feel safe and wholesome and clean, more people are going to put it on and say, oh, this might actually be kind of cool, you know, because not everybody's going to get one for their own personal use. So like, I think this is a good move, like for marketing, you know, from a marketing standpoint, like,
yeah, you
know, it's as good of a move as like, Purelling or, you know, Clorox wiping a controller in between demos. Like, just do it, you dummy.
Yeah, it says in looks like July 2017 they're gonna have a ribbed version for her pleasure. Oh, God. No, like, so what that takes care of like the very front of your face. What about like the earphones and everything on the sides? Like, I imagine that gets pretty sweaty and nasty too.
I can't imagine. So when I did this, I didn't have any sound. It was just the visual. Like the strap, I don't know what they're doing with that either. Like, this is the part that'll give you ringworm, stage 4 ringworm. But
yeah.
No idea.
I put an Oculus on like 2 or 3 weeks ago. Didn't even think about the germ ramifications of it.
And now you won't be able to stop.
Wonder why your face has been rotting off?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's begun.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer section, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Jolly, you posted the question, and this is your question as well. What did you ask them?
I asked, what game started out on the wrong foot but then grew on you as you played?
Okay, so did you find the image first, or did you...
No.
Oh, okay.
I found the image after. And it's like super... For people who have not seen the image, it is a dude with tattoos of Game Over on his toes. But like, they're the grossest toes in existence. They're so ugly and horrible. And like, you know, Yeah. Just go look at it. It's gross.
Yeah. If they're tattoos, they either blew out, they're like a really bad ink, or they're just straight up infected. It's real bad. But I'll get us started here with Derek, who says, obligatory Dark Souls mention. The reputation for high difficulty and get good community turned me off of it big time. It took a friend sitting down and walking me through the first two bosses for things to click. I've since grown to love certain communities around the game, and I feel like its reputation betrays one of our medium's most special works. I would agree. The whole, hey, this is an incredibly hard game, has not only scared people away from it, and kind of poisoned the community a bit, but it has steered the development in a direction that makes things just a little bit too hard. Listen to Bonfire Side Chat to hear us talk about that more.
Which, by the way, I reached that...
most of them. Dennis, what were you saying?
I reached the DLC boss that you had mentioned, and I agree, I don't like it either.
Oh, yeah, Alana?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I will have to do my obligatory mention of, you know, I didn't bounce off of Dark Souls. I loved it when I was playing it. I, you know, played a hell of a lot of it when I first sat down to play it, but I just haven't had time to get back to, you know, messing with it. It takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
That I don't have, but someday I will play it. It's on that list.
Yeah. Well, I mean, famously, I bounced off of Dark Souls really, really hard.
That's interesting.
Back then, like back in 2011, before I gave it a second shot and really enjoyed it, like to the point where I, you know, I believe that bouncing off of it is actually an important part of the life cycle for getting into it. Like you have to reject the journey before you embrace it.
Hero's journey.
Yep. The chosen undead's journey.
Yep.
But yeah, I totally get that one and do not blame anybody for bouncing off of it. Let's see, Ben, what does Raghavan say?
Raghavan says Metal Gear Rising was turned off at the time the game came out because I thought, oh great, another mindless slasher. That over the top crap is so lame. The folly of youth. I picked it up recently with zero expectations and had my mind summarily blown to bits. The music, the combat, the boss battles are all on another level, and now I'm an ardent Platinum Games fan. To quote GB, so good.
So good. Yeah. No, it's Platinum is the studio of this for me. I bounced off of Platinum kind of hard, and now I love everything they do.
Mm. I wasn't very interested when I popped into Transformers Devastation. I'm sure it plays really well, but like it just was underwhelmingly like it starts and it was really underwhelming fashion, especially compared to the older Transformers games that I really like. So
the cover shooter ones.
Yeah. So that being the case, like I intend to go back to it because I'm pretty convinced that it's going to be a really fun game when I get into it. It's just I open it up. I'm like, nay. That's all right. I'll do it later. So,
yeah. Dennis, what does Kilo say?
Kilo says, much like the WAF episode will tell you, Killer 7 was just so bad at the beginning, I didn't touch it for a long time. When Halloween, a friend decided to try it again, or a friend and I decided to try again, and ended up finishing it that night. It was appropriately spooky.
Mm.
Cool.
I'm trying to think if that is a game you can finish in one night. I remember it being like a 10-hour game.
But if you technically have, then.
Marathonic?
I suppose. I suppose. Yeah. But yeah, Killer 7 is obtuse and hard to get into. Jello, what does Eric say?
Eric says, Lost Planet 2. I still think the game deserves a very solid 6 out of 10, so it didn't win me over entirely, but when I got the chance to play it the way the developers intended with three other people and microphones, it really clicked. When you try to play it solo with the frustratingly inefficient bots, which will be your experience now if you try to play it, and was my experience in the beginning, you'll probably be pushed away. The controls also feel very rough, almost like chafing at first, but you can get the hang of it if you keep at it. Messing around with the mech suits and even trying out the very special combination mech suit was very rewarding, though.
Yeah. Lost Planet is a series I've only been exposed to the demo for the first game, but I understand that in spite of the fact that it is primarily a grappling hook game, like that is one of the first areas where Capcom started like trying out Monster Hunter stuff on a bigger scale in on console. Like
I remember always being intrigued by it.
Yeah, you can get them for dirt cheap too. Like they're always on sale, at least on PC. I dig their aesthetic, but they're just a little bit too obtuse. But all of those are reasons I could see bouncing off of it. That Eric gave. Yeah. Callum writes, Fallout 3 without question. After borrowing it off of my friend and plodding along with the dullest main plot line in the world, I gave up after I couldn't find my way to get to the satellite dish for $3. Picked it up again for €5, Great British pounds, GBP, on sale 4 years later, and just went off exploring the world, and now I must have sunk 200 plus hours into it. While I now recognize it as one of the weaker titles in the series, I would have never given Fallout 1 or 2 a go without having played 3 first, and also listening to WAF. Well, thank you.
Woff, man. Woff's gotten good the stuff. Mention.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, we get that. We get people who talk about, like, oh, I listened to that episode because I haven't played that game, but I was interested in it, or I played it and bounced off of it, and I want to find out what I'm missing. And, like, a lot of folks go back. Like, you don't have to be a Dr. Static to play the games that we play, you know. but it helps. That was dumb. That was a dumb thing I said. Ben, what does David say?
David says EverQuest. Starting out as a newbie with no weapon skill, missing about 75% of your attacks is terrible, and back when I played soloing was near impossible after the first few levels. It wasn't until I found a guild and made some friends that the game really started to shine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such can be said about life.
Gotta find a guild, otherwise you're not going to be able to sell your tapestries in the markets.
I was missing so many attacks when I was a kid.
Yeah. I would say that about MMOs in general, actually. I think that your first one, it doesn't help if it's EverQuest and it's inherently unfriendly, but I think that, you know, getting a crew to run with would actually be the better way to do it. Yeah.
Gosh, now I'm trying to remember my first MMO. I think it was City of Heroes.
It would have had to have been, based on what I know.
Yeah. May it rest in peace.
So is it shut down entirely, or did they just take it free to play?
I think it's gone. Yeah. I could be completely wrong on that, but I think it might be gone.
Mm. No good. Dennis, what does Lionel say?
He says, Flower, Sun, and Rain, which I've never even heard of before. Started on the wrong foot and stayed on the wrong foot throughout. But somehow managed to make me love how bad and insufferable it was. Solid 1 out of 10, and also one of my favorite games on the DS.
A lot of pseudos on this list. Right.
Yeah.
The thing is there was a comment, an additional comment by Robert saying, same, I can't dispute any of FSR's bad reviews, but I still feel it's a total masterpiece. And then also the prequel just got re-released into English for the first time on Steam, The Silver Case.
Yeah, that was talked about the demo on the brief a while back.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
So I can't tell if Lionel's joking, but I understand it. I get it. Jala, what does Sam say?
Sam says, the first time I attempted to play Lisa, the painful RPG, I gave up after an hour after being confused by the map. It's a 2D side-scrolling RPG. Having to choose between losing my entire inventory or permadeath for a party member and game overs from accidentally walking off ledges. A couple of months later, I decided to watch a Let's Play of Lisa, and after seeing a number of tips and tricks to get through the first area of the game, I went on to play through the rest, play through the epilogue DLC, then play through the entire thing two more times to get all of the achievements, and now it's one of my favorite indie RPGs and one of my most listened game soundtracks.
Hmm.
Cool.
Is it bouncing off of a game?
I remember
the game just like guts you, like when you try to approach it.
There are no wrong answers.
I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
You were saying something, Jala. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I wasn't saying anything of any real importance. Basically, I just remember when he was going through and playing that game, like, for a solid chunk.
I don't understand why my hand hurts so much. It's on the stove.
Hey, man, like, all of us have had those kinds of...
Oh, yeah.
Jala's had some of those recently that she went through. Although, like, nothing changed my mind about those games, but that's all right.
Mikhail writes, I feel like you guys might have discussed this one already, but Deus Ex Human Revolution comes to mind. I didn't necessarily bounce off of it the first time, but my interest quickly fizzled after the first couple of hours, which involve its least interesting levels and certainly doesn't showcase what makes the game interesting. Neither do the characters immediately sell the experience. The voice acting is pretty inconsistent, if not largely terrible. David Sarif is so hard to listen to. Adam Johnson, a self-serious, goofily gruff Neo cosplayer with sunglasses stapled to his face, is not an apparently interesting protagonist. After a few missions, however, the game picks up and becomes something rare and exciting. It got its hooks into me the second time around when I installed the director's cut version, and eventually its goofiness stopped making an impression on me.
Just go numb to goofiness, and that'll fix everything.
Yep. I forget... Ben, you're the one who's played Human Revolution, right?
Correct.
Okay. Is it generally one of those games where somebody would say, hey, it takes like 5 hours to get good?
Yeah, I'd say like probably 2 to 3. Yeah. It's like the Detroit mission area is really awesome. And then the second mission area, I forget where it is. It's like in a city in China. I forget which one, I think. But those are both really awesome things. But then the rest of it's kind of like bland. Hmm. When so I started the new Deus Ex, but I haven't played it or anything. But there's like one part where it recaps like what happened in the previous game, and the entire video is like, oh yeah, I vaguely remember this, but it's just like just no consequences in the game.
So. Oh no.
Yeah.
Yeah. No extrinsic consequences.
Yeah, it's like everyone's either like shadowy or they're friendly, and then they turn into a bad guy.
Yeah.
And
no good. I mean, not no good. Like, it's a game a lot of people like. I just haven't played it. I'm sure there's a difference between a game like Flower Sun Rain, which is kind of like meant to be obtuse, or even just games that have less than intuitive systems, like, say, a Dark Souls. There's probably a difference between those and games that are more eminently playable, but just kind of have that pacing problem of a really, really saggy front half.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. Dennis, you played Final Fantasy 13.
I have. It is a corridor that just grinds you into the ground. And I would love to say that I played it and then like it eventually grew on me, but
no,
like no. It was too little too late, unfortunately. Which is like I got to the very final boss, so I, you know, that I guess that says something, but it was, you know, it did not satisfy.
Yeah. Oh, well. Let's see here, Ben, what does, oh gosh, Michael say, there we go.
Michael says, when I was much younger, I was super into JRPGs. While browsing Blockbuster, I picked up a game because it had a cool anime dudes on the cover. Anime dudes always come with a JRPG, right? This led me to accidentally renting my first fighting game, Guilty Gear X2. Initially, when I realized it was one of those dumb boulevard brawler games, 10-year-old Michael almost went to return it. Still, I gave it a shot. The shot was enough to kindle a lifelong love affair with 2D fighting games. Nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
When was the first Guilty Gear
that's
game
awesome.
Out? Huh, because I've met Michael.
Long time ago.
Was it? Okay.
Long time ago.
Jala, what does Graham say?
Graham says, my disdain for traditional fantasy settings didn't help me getting into The Witcher. The combat and backtracking didn't help either. I only played it because at the time I couldn't get Steam and it was a gift from a friend. After getting to the second chapter and delving deeper into the lore and characters, I began to appreciate it more. I eventually warmed up to combat because even though it was made in an engine not meant for action-oriented gameplay, the combat is manageable, very manageable once your hero develops many skills. I began to appreciate how Eastern European the story is too. It has a certain flair that you'd be hard to find in an American or British fantasy story. See, that's, I keep bouncing off of that one. I can't get past the prologue. I can't play like the first Witcher past the prologue. I just have no interest. It's not even that I hate it. It's not that there's anything particularly wrong. I just wander off. I don't even know. So
everybody says just go to Witcher 3. I just that's so hard for me to do.
I think well, I would I mean, say I that have, too.
Yeah.
It's pretty fun.
See, I don't know. Sometime maybe we'll see.
Yeah, that's another one of those things like Dark Souls. That is a huge time long thing.
Yeah, a time sink. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Like I can't just jump into that one right now. So
understood.
You just get to the part where you can play Gwent, and then you just play Gwent over and over again.
Or you just buy the game that is only Gwent.
I've seen like real life versions where people have made Gwent into a thing, a physical thing you can get and play.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Seems like a really fun game. Yep. Patrick writes, in recent memory, I'd have to say Persona 3. I started my playthrough about 2 years ago. I had never played a Persona or SMT game before, and I was overwhelmed by all of the different systems to keep track of, not to mention that I hadn't played through a JRPG in years. I eventually picked it up again last month and actually just finished my first playthrough yesterday. Now on to Persona 4 Golden, where I imagine I will have a much smoother experience. this is hearsay, but Persona 4 is a lot of fun, and I have heard people say that it is a far sight better and more enjoyable and kind of more intriguing than 3 is.
See, that's after I finished Steins Gate. I've got that one sitting, waiting for my Vita. So,
yeah.
Thanks to Brian Wade. 4.
Cool.
Yeah. Go for it. It feels like it is exactly made for the Vita.
Yay! Another thing, though, is that I've been having this weird urge to go back and play Final Fantasy X again.
They have
the HD on Vita also. I can get it on Vita. Yeah. So
that is
I'm like, I can play it. That's perfect because it's I can take it with me places and don't have to sit down and camp on it there. That's great.
It is a very, very good kind of adaptation or port of that. Again, JRPGs, I cannot imagine playing one on a home console now.
Yeah, it's got to be mobile for me, for sure.
Handheld for life. Ben, what does Franz say?
Franz says, the original Deus Ex. I still don't know how I made it through that first level the first time I played it. Now I know the amazing game that lies beyond, but back then I had no idea.
Yeah. No argument here. It doesn't put a very good foot forward.
It sounds like that's the pattern in the games too, because people are saying about the most recent Deus Ex as well. Where it's like just play it until you get to the hub world, then it's really good.
with the most recent one, I just hear that the tutorial is mega shitty.
Yeah, I wasn't too impressed by it, but it was fine. Yeah. I guess I mean, don't know.
It's internet mega shitty. So like,
yeah.
Dennis, what does Tim say?
Tim says, like Patrick, I was put off by Persona's 3 start. So when I heard all the buzz around Persona 4 Golden, I figured I'd give it another shot. After 4 hours of exposition and when are we going to get to the fireworks factory, I had my first dungeon fight after that and was on board. 75 hours in, I'm still loving it.
Holy shit, that's a commitment. I don't know if I'm going to play that game right now.
it's a JRPG. I don't know if it's necessary.
Yeah,
Yeah. Oh,
I'm being facetious. Don't pay attention.
No, it's fine. I was kind of like, well, what'd you expect?
I know.
No arguments there. Jella, what does Jarrus say?
He says, Phantasy Star 1. It's a very old school JRPG, so there's basically no escaping grinding experience for the first several hours of gameplay. But once you get beyond that, there's a really cool universe to explore and immerse yourself in.
Yeah. 4 was a little bit too archaic for me, so I don't know that I could go to 1 again. It's
how
hard.
Much could it have regressed in 4 iterations?
Right, not regressed, but progressed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Christopher writes, Dragon's Dogma, I came to it after having played Souls and having never played a Hunter game, so traversing back and forth the world that felt devoid of meaning was so off-putting. Once I got into the groove of accepting a bunch of missions and treating them as expeditions with a number of goals rather than one-off missions, I was able to see what it had to offer and really loved it. Also, that true ending. I don't know about the ending, but it is a fundamentally different game than Souls.
I'm so mad. That was a free PlayStation Plus game, and I just forgot to download games that month. I'll probably never play it now because I can't get it for free.
I always feel like such a jackass when I do that.
Yeah.
I wish I could just pay an extra dollar, and they would say, forget it. It doesn't matter if you downloaded it. It's just yours. I feel like they're tricking me.
Why don't you just set a reminder on your phone to tell you to download the games? It's really easy, guys.
I know it's easy.
I have a distinct memory in City of Heroes of when I realized you could take multiple quests at once. Life-changing right there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because you just do big sweeps like between towns and stuff. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Or you play Guild Wars 2 and there's no like quest that you take and you just kind of do whatever's happening near you, which is also a good system.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then finally, Ben, what does Chris say?
Chris says, I recall Fallout 2, and Planescape Torment having kind of long and boring intros to play through. Fortunately, they all get exceptional right after their openings.
Yeah. Fallout 2 especially. Dear God. That Temple of Trials or whatever. Yeah. So thank you, everybody, for writing in. We should probably go through ours. I think I gave mine, honestly. Let's see here. So Dark Souls. Yeah. You know what? Final Fantasy 12. Like, I got it when it came out in like 2006. I think because I was in college, I played the first couple of levels of it in the dorm, Dennis. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of like sat there forever until after I graduated, basically. And then I just kind of like really dug into it in earnest, basically since I had nothing else to do. And like everything that I found tedious about it or just kind of like didn't get about the combat system kind of clicked at that point. And it is still a really, and I'm excited for the remake when it comes out.
Yay!
Yeah, I remember you going through that the first time and tweeting out your surprised love that you had found for it.
Yep. Yeah. Ben, how about you? What'd you bounce off of?
So I think Metal Gear Solid 3, I think the first time I played that, I wasn't too into it because I was very confused by the gameplay. So I didn't understand why you couldn't just run through and shoot everybody. And like I was expecting it to be a first-person shooter like Halo, I guess. And it wasn't until one of my college roommates like basically showed me how to play it. And it was like, oh, okay, this is really cool. And then I picked it up and played through it. And I believe I kind of 100%ed it. I got the Infinity Gun. So, yeah, it's awesome.
Nice. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, mine was Binding of Isaac. So I got it on PC, I think, as part of a Humble Bundle fairly early on. And just, you know, didn't get it the first time I played it. And, you know, it was just kind of juvenile, and I felt like I was just lost all the time, and so bounced off it pretty hard. But then came back around, and I watched people stream it and kind of got the inside tips. So, like, hey, you know, the secret room is always kind of bordered by three other rooms, so that can help you find it. And here's some of the items that you should really be on the lookout for, and just kind of got that foundation kind of fed to me instead of having to earn it on my own. And then when it was released on Vita through PlayStation Plus, downloaded it and had that on there for a long time. It's just a go-to, hey, got a couple minutes, play some Binding of Isaac, and really got into it then.
Yeah. I mean, I had a pretty similar one. I kind of was into it, but I just knew I was going to be bad at it. And I've only ever played it casually. I don't even think I've gotten as good as you are.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that is one of those games where the knowledge is very transferable. We're just watching one or two streams of people who really know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Pays huge, huge dividends.
Yeah. Just a couple of basic decisions you have to make that I constantly forget how to make.
Yep. Yeah.
And Jala, how about you?
Well, the first things that I can say are Azure Dreams and Digimon Card Battle, the tutorials. I hate tutorials with a passion. Mm-hmm. And so, like, both of those tutorials just took too long and were just slogs. And, you know, like, there's a lot of moving parts in those games, so it takes a while to get the gist of how to do them. So, like, I bounced off of them, and then I just came back to them, as I always do, and tried them again. And then I ended up loving both of those games to where they're two of my absolute favorite games to this day. Other games I bounced off of and I didn't ever particularly get excited over, but like I did play through them. Like I played through Dear Esther. I bounced off it completely the first time and then I went through and I found merit to it. It's kind of like with Danganronpa and then Virtue's Last Reward. Like there were things about them that I liked, but there was also things I didn't like. But it's funny, especially now in hindsight, slowly but surely over time, I don't know if it's like the rose-colored glass effect or what, but like Danganronpa is seeming like not so intolerable to me now.
Oh, no.
So, like, I don't know if that means I'm going to get, like, this wild hair up my ass and decide that I'm going to play Danganronpa 2 and then get mad all over again or what the deal's going to be. But, so anyway, also, I sort of kind of bounced off of Dishonored, but not really. Like, I kept on playing it, but, like, when I was first playing it and I was in like the jail level, and before I got Blink, I was just like, I don't know about this game, man. These guys talk some sugar about the game, but I don't know about this thing. And Gary's like, just play it until you get Blink. And I'm like, okay. And, you know, just, you know, press through there. Don't even try to be all careful in the jail. Just get out of it. And I'm like, okay. And I did that. And then I turned out to totally love the game. So, you know, but I didn't actually bounce off of that. I just kind of was getting to the point where I probably was gonna. So Gary recalled me from that before I actually bounced.
And that's good, because we really need to stick together. Like, we are under assault here, Jolly.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take over the podcast.
I'm so excited about Dishonored 2, you guys. I
know.
I just can't
wait.
It's
a thing.
Yeah. Here in like 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
I know. Very soon.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that is great. This is a good question. If you would like to participate in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for those questions to go up on Tuesday afternoons. Those are courtesy of Jala and Dennis, and then also a bunch of people in the community who suggest questions, oftentimes related to things that are going on right now, but not always. It's always a good time.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the things that we have been playing. Do you mind if I get started? Because I've got nothing.
Well, there you go.
There
good
you
job.
Go. I just want to say the barest amount of stuff about a game called Layers of Fear, which I'm doing as a Hex Crank live stream. Did the first hour and a half of it last weekend, and I'm gonna try and finish it out this upcoming weekend. But just so crazy, like both my hair and my pants are on fire. Doing stuff, getting ready for PRG, but I'd love to fit in the last part of it, because for as cheap as some of the scares are, so much else about it is like completely tailored for me. You can watch the first part of that stream and kind of get a sense for it. I don't think I can do a lot of justice aside from saying you are a tortured artist who is wandering through a house, kind of gone home style. The trick is that it is in a logical space where you will walk through a door and then explore a room and then go back out the other door, and you're going to go into an entirely different place. And the entire house is filled with these paintings that do completely horrible and terrifying things. And the character you're playing as, or at least the character that you're getting a lot of story about, is one of the least likable protagonists in history.
How so?
Oh, no.
Just a piece of shit to his wife and kid.
Is it intentionally written that way, or
I think so, but in a way that is kind of like I need to see some kind of light to this, because there hasn't been anything redeeming, and I'm normally kind of on board for an unlikable protagonist, you know, especially if it pays off in some way. I have not seen anything that says I should care a whit about whether or not I live or die, so. That's a bit of a bummer as far as the writing goes, but like the visual scares are diverse and interesting. You know, jump scares are just one tool in the toolbox. If you ever use it, you just end up with a bunch of pounded in screws. But I think that this kind of at least so far has gotten some really good dread out of it as well. And if they didn't have the inventiveness backing it up, I would say like, yeah, it's a little bit one note.
Hmm.
Yeah,
I'm looking at some of the pictures of it right now. It looks like a pretty game for sure.
Yeah, it's very well done. Like from a presentation standpoint, mm-hmm. It's just like a walking sim kind of thing. You're never really in any danger, which takes a little bit away from like the immediate sense of fright. But like it's more of a like somebody in the stream said, oh, this is more of like a losing your mind thing than I'm gonna die thing. So
I tried to watch some of it, and I was just so tired I fell asleep. Yeah. so if I ever like if I'm in the stream and then I just like go silent and stuff and then you never hear from me again, I probably fell asleep.
I understand.
I try.
I understand entirely, don't worry. Yeah, so Layers of Fear, it's a Steam game. Who wants to go next?
I can go next. I don't really have a whole okay.
Jala, it was you.
Okay. Well, co-op corner first, as usual. I played Section 4 of Portal 2 with Greg. We only have one more section with the gels, and I already warned him. Oh, and by the way, that one puzzle that I said the last time, like the funnel thing that like I was having problems with, the moment I got back into the game, I was even tired that day, but like really exhausted, and I still was just like, oh, I know how to fix, you know, how to do this puzzle. Just I rolled in there, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I got it. We're good. So... you know, like it just needed time away from it, and then he come back to it, and so we have been good so far. Of course, the gels, there's some ridiculous puzzles coming up, so those will be the ones where I'll be like, all right, I'm done. So I also played Magicka chapters 1 and 2 with Jason. He may be the lucky winner of person who actually finishes Magicka with me. Possibly, maybe if we can like keep up the schedule going.
You guys are still speaking.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the thing. Nice. So yeah, that's what I've been co-oping. I didn't even get to do any more Resi 6 with Sam this weekend because I was very busy.
Yeah.
So. You know, that's the thing. But anyway, the other thing I've been playing is just more Steins Gate. I've played a lot of it, but I've just been playing the one game. I finished the rest of Chapter 3, all of Chapter 4. I'm somewhere in Chapter 5, which is about halfway through the game.
Yeah. Those chapters speed up. Like, a lot of those chapters are individual stories, and, like, you can get endings in those.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. So far, like, other things I can say about it, like, it's getting better. Like, it was really kind of rough for a while there, but it's getting better to where, like, I'm liking it more, which I knew was going to happen, when I started seeing things start to change a little bit in the dynamics. So, you're starting to get, like, they're starting to mess with time travel and starting to change things in the past just to collect data or whatever. And the main character is the only one who has any recollection of, these, you know, like how things were before they made the change. So they went back and changed the gender of this, one character, this male character who wanted to be born a female, and they did some other stuff like that changed things kind of drastically. And you're starting to get these feelings of, you know, like bad, this is a bad idea, but like they don't directly say it's a bad idea. Nobody in, you know, is doing any of this stuff, you know, is saying that, but like, it's starting to feel weird and wrong, you know? And he's already gotten like a death threat, you know, like we're watching you kind of message from who knows where. And he just kind of like blew that off. And, you know, I'm like, okay, well, whatever.
And so far, he's been talking about the organization coming after him and trying to stop his research. So this just plays into the delusion, right?
Yes and no. But anyway, so yeah. You know, it's been kind of interesting because, you know, like sometimes like he just, the last bit that I remember is that the part-time warrior girl, like the girl, the out of towner who was looking for her father, she ended up leaving and he failed to like catch her before she left. And then he went back and changed time. So that way, you know, changed what happened. So that way he could, you know, find her and you know, keep her in town or whatever, and you know, save her from being depressed and alone or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that was the last major thing that happened. I mean, like, they're again sitting around talking about, you know, how time travel works again. So now they're trying to figure out like the differences between, you know, CERN's stuff and then like the phone wave, and, you know, like how the phone wave is able to do what it's doing, and can we actually send something physical, or is it just data and all of that. So that's what they're talking about right now. Yeah. But even those parts are not getting like, I mean, they're still pretty technical when they get into them, but they're not slowing it down to the same degree that it was at the start. So, but it's sad that it's like fucking halfway through the game before it starts getting to that point.
Yeah,
like,
it really is.
Damn.
It really and truly is.
Yeah,
how long have you played so far?
That's a good question. I want to say 13 hours or something so far.
Yeah, I wouldn't balk if you said it was a 30-hour game.
Yeah, so I mean, like, I think it's something like 13 hours, 12 or 13 hours at this point, and I'm about halfway through. So, yeah.
And 30 hours to get all the endings, too. Like, that is something that I did. But
yeah. So... Yeah. But yeah, so it's like I said though, it is getting better. It's not like it started out pretty rough, and yeah, the pacing is crap. And I really, you know, without having seen the anime, I can say that the anime is going to be way better than the game.
Yeah.
but you know, like it's something that like if I watched anything, I would probably go watch it. But I don't watch shit, so.
You know. So here we are.
Yeah, here we are.
I'm happy you're warming up to it at the very least. Like, and you know, at least, you know, I don't know if you're ever going to make up for that initial kind of deficit of attention and care that the game should have kind of given. But
well, like the thing is that like a game can have problems, and I can still end up really liking it. Yeah. You know, like that's not an issue. Like it's not like okay, you are now cursed because you know, like say for example, when we were talking about you know, games that you bounce off of. I mean, like you know, the beginning of Azure Dreams and Digimon Card Battle is a slog, but I still love those games. Right. So this is, I mean, granted, this is half the game that takes like four fucking ever before it gets to where it's you know getting pretty good, but like still, you know, that's just the pacing is stupid. But, yeah. You know, like I don't have any other complaints, really. I mean, Daru is not being quite the freak nugget that he has been.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's calmed down some. So that's OK. So, you know, that's good news.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I just because of the conversation from the last time I downloaded, cause you had said that Phoenix Wright is Ace Attorney is on, mobile. So I downloaded it and I opened it up and I looked at it and then I saw that, his chief is like, you know, wearing a bra with like a blazer over it. And I posted an acerbic comment about that. And then I closed it. I didn't actually play any of it. Like I bear in mind that when I make these comments on Twitter or anywhere, like I am just being snarky as shit because I'm just super snarky. Like I may or may not come across that way when I'm on the podcast, but I am just sarcastic. So like, it's not any value judgment about the game. And like, as soon as I posted that, all these people are like, I think you'll really like the game. Don't hate it. Like, no, I don't hate it. I am just laughing because she's wearing a fucking bra with a blazer over it. Like,
so
okay, where'd your shirt go, homie? Like,
so if it makes you feel better, she dies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Perfect. Okay.
No.
Oh, good. That's cool. Then
it happens super early on. So she's like your mentor. Like you are her, you know, like the junior attorney at her agency. Mia Fey is her name. And yes, she is wearing a ridiculous outfit that shows off her large breasts, and that is a regrettable portion of the game. The more regrettable portion of the game, and again, this is like minor spoilers, but like her little sister comes in and she's like a spirit medium. This is Mia Fey. She's a really good character. I like her. However, like this is embarrassing and there's no justification for it, because like when she as a spirit medium channels the spirit of Mia, just her breasts get big and like she like just like she kind of takes on like the like, oh, like just you would not believe that I am Mia, like if my eyes glowed and if I was talking in her voice or whatever, you just I need to actually like this is the defining trait of this character, and we're gonna do this super creepy thing for the super young girl to get this point across. Nothing else in the series is like that.
Don't you know that the spirit just possesses the boobies? That is all. Like, okay, whatever. I mean, like that. You know, I don't honestly really give a shit about that.
What do you think Bruno Mars means when he says swimming in your water is something spiritual? I said, what do you think Bruno Mars means when he says swimming in your water is something spiritual?
No, I heard you. I just didn't understand.
Well, anyway, no, like we've had long conversations about booby ladies in the past. I really don't give a crap about booby ladies. Yeah. They're okay. Like it's fine. As long as it's not over the top, super egregious, like, you know, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Like even though that particular thing bothers you, it probably won't bother me. Like I'm going to laugh at it. I'm going to point, you know, I'm going to take some screenshots and I'm going to post it on Twitter and make some commentary about it. But
I'm not like blushing and like kind of like looking at it to the corner of my eye, waiting for the boobs to go away, but it's still just kind of like little, it's just embarrassing. Like just I think about like, oh, is anybody watching me play this?
Somebody looks over your shoulder, what the fuck is going on? What are you playing, dude? Yeah.
It's a weird hobby, guys.
So anyway, that's on my...
I was going on a flight for a business trip, and I was like, oh, I'll catch up on some Danganronpa. And then I realized that unintentionally I was sitting next to my coworker. I was like, maybe I'll play something other than Danganronpa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Yeah. So anyway, like that is on my phone. It'll be played sometime. Maybe it'll be eventually played. I don't know when.
Yeah.
So whatever, it's there.
Cool. Dennis, you wanted to chime in.
I did. It was going to be, I was going to say it would be a graceful ramp up from you're nothing to my, like, I've done new things and games I've talked about before, and then on to truly new stuff. Just really quickly, played more co-op Divinity Original Sin, and that's continued to be a lot of fun and a lot of text-based gameplay. Like, there's a lot of interpersonal aspects to the game, just in terms of like storytelling and how you solve quests and everything like that. Like, it took us easily 2 or 3 hours before we were doing any serious combat, which I take as a positive mark, especially because they're doing something like that with co-op. And I talked last week about how co-op is kind of antithetical to that kind of game, and they're making it work. What I found super interesting, though, was the way we kind of inserted our own little stories into what was happening. So I'm playing with Evan B. He's playing a more pragmatic character, and I'm playing a more happy-go-lucky character. And it's very clear that as we're like choosing dialogue options, we're kind of feeling out exactly how we want these characters to be. But as I'm you know, talking to this one person, it becomes apparent that he's like a salesman for a pyramid scheme. and Evan, as you know, the pragmatic person, just telling me over Discord is like, don't do it, man. Don't do it. Don't do it. I'm like, I love this guy. I'm going to keep on clicking the answers that are like believing him. And so finally it gets the options like, yeah, we'd love to sign up. He's like, what the hell are you talking about? What'd you get me into? And all this stuff. But a little bit later, you walk into a building, and there's a room off to the side that's like the little, you know, mini chapel. And there's some cult leader in there that started trying to sweet talk Evan into, you know, being a part of the cult. And he, of course, immediately takes the very first, you know, no thanks option and walks out of the room. And I hadn't been in the room. I was off in another part. And then we, you know, kind of continue on. And I told him, I was like, I like to imagine that, like, you know, we had this exchange around the pyramid scheme. And then you walked into that room, saw the guy, turned right out. I'm like, hey, what's in there? And you're like, nothing. It's a broom closet. It's empty. Move along. But it's kind of fun to be this like, okay, so now the way we're going to play this is like, I'll, you know, I've never met a stranger, and Evan will be trying to like shepherd me away from the more deceitful parties that we encounter.
Yeah.
And it's really fun that's kind of emerged, and we're kind of inserting that into the way we're playing, even if it's not always readily apparent. it informs the game in a really interesting way.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun. So, and we did get to combat, and it does hold up well with four characters being split across two people.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
that feels equitable.
Yeah, it does. And we kind of lucked into my main is more melee, and my kind of secondary character is more ranged. His main is ranged, and his secondary is melee. So that it kind of complements really, really nicely.
Well, that's really good. So are those NPCs like interactable, like dialogue wise?
They are, especially when you first get them, you kind of have to like talk them into joining your party, which for the two that we got didn't take much. There was another one that wanted us to swear that we would never we would never deal with demons or never deal with occult stuff. We would banish it immediately. And I was cool with that. Cause again, I love everybody. Sure. Whatever you say, man, that sounds great. And then Evan was not at all for it because that's like, he's a sorcerer. That's kind of what he does.
Yeah.
So we couldn't pick that person up. But they allow you at certain points to click on a character to like have a conversation with them about what's going on. And it's mostly between the two main characters, but there have been instances where you can do it with a side character.
Yeah.
Yeah. lots of fun on that one. And it's I always love when I find a game that I genuinely enjoy that is super long. Like, you know, and I know that there's just a ton of meat on this bone that I'll be able to enjoy this for a long time. So I'm looking forward to getting into that one further. Go ahead.
I was going to say, what's the breakdown? Like, how much of it is fighting and then how much of it is actually like dialogue and talking to people?
It's been easily 80% dialogue, 20% fighting so far.
Okay.
Maybe even higher. Wow. And that is because we've been in a main like town area. And we just towards the end of our last session ventured out into like the wilds, and that's all combat, right? Maybe a little bit of storytelling, but it's just, you know, so maybe I don't know how much of the game occurs in the wilds versus in the town. Certainly for the first 4 or 5 hours, the game is largely in this town talking with people, trying to figure out mysteries and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So that's Divinity Original Sin. The enhanced edition, if you must know.
Nothing but the best for you and Evan B.
Yeah, I know. So then the other two games, which I've talked about before, but I've now officially played every single mode in Rocket League at least once.
Okay.
And that was a fun experience. I just decided that I was going to be like, all right, I got to check all these. I at least got to see it all. And so I played Snow Day, which is the version with a hockey puck that doesn't fly around nearly as well. That was fun. I played Rumble, which is like an arcadey version with power-ups. And then their current, it's like Labs or Rocket Labs or something like that, where they just kind of have a rotating experimental mode, was an arena that kind of had three corridors to it. So you could go left, you could go right, or you could go down the center. Mm-hmm. And once you kind of picked that lane, everyone kind of shifted over to that lane and played, or you could wrap around to the lane next to it in anticipation that you could maybe get a good angle once it came out the other side. But that was probably my favorite, just because it felt like there was having the lane slowed the game down just a little bit. And you were less careening around and more thinking about like, okay, I just need to get in position right now. Or, you know, I need to just charge the ball, and I know it's not going to vary as wildly where it goes, 'cause I'm kind of in a lane. So I like that one the best.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see, Ben, do they kind of rotate through the same experimental modes, or is like every single time a completely new one?
So, it changes update to update. I think the first time that they released it, they maybe had like four maps or something like that. And then one of the maps that they had in that got turned into Neo Tokyo, which is a running map in the competitive and non-competitive tracks. And then I think after that, they made another update. So you can still play some of the old Rocket Labs, I think. But then right now they have maybe another set of like three or four different maps that it rotates through.
Okay, so you it's not guaranteed which map you're gonna queue into when you hit that button. It's not like all lanes all the time.
Yeah, it's just a rotating randomized set of maps. So yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then finally, this is my like, you know, bi-monthly Hearthstone check-in. I competed in my first Hearthstone tournament this week.
Cool.
I just found myself with some free time and Googled around, found a site called StriveWire, that like basically just runs tournaments for all these different games. And I was incredibly impressed at how easy it was to sign up and how smoothly everything ran. I went 0-2 out in the first round, so no biggie there, but just the logistics of having, you know, 18 randoms sign up for a tournament, only 16 can play, and then you got to run a bracket of 16. You got to have them kind of self-report who won and who lost and deal with any disputes there, although I don't think there were any disputes. You know, getting the person's gamer tag to find them and all this stuff, just it ran really smoothly and intuitively. And it was a great experience overall. But it was interesting because the payout, like the winner is a 16-person bracket. First place got $2 and second place got $1. And I don't know if what their model is, if they're just making enough off of ad revenue that they can, you know, have that payout for every tournament because they were free to enter, or if at some point they ask you to pay to enter, or maybe there's like special larger tournaments that you have to pay to enter or what. But the site ran incredibly smoothly, and I would, you know, if I ever want to do more tournament related stuff in any game, that would probably be the first place I check.
I wonder if that is just kind of like table stakes in order to kind of cover the cost at scale, or if that is kind of offset by like a larger ticket, like bigger, more advertised events, or, you know, stuff that has kind of more buy-in.
Yeah, I have to imagine it's the latter there. They have, I know they're like on weekends, they run much larger tournaments, and I think there is a buy-in there. So kind of worthwhile to keep people engaged and checking in during the week. And then on the weekends, you can have the big like pay to play stuff. That's my guess anyway. Or, you know, it could be some sort of nefarious. Oh, go ahead.
Do they just add the money to like your Steam account then? Or do you have to like give them credit card information?
I don't know. It seems so. I haven't given any credit card information or personal details. It was very, very simple to sign up and create an account with nothing much more than just your email address. I imagine if you ever want to cash out, if you win, you probably need to give your credit card and all that. I know there have been sites previously where it's like you can only cash out at a certain limit. And this is like betting sites that I did in college where like they gave you free money to bet with. And if you ever reached $20 in winnings, you could cash out, but you started with literally 10 cents and the probability that you would ever actually turn that into, you know, $20 is pretty astronomical. So yeah, not sure exactly how they're structuring it, but the, like I said, just the layout of the site, everything being super intuitive, like you click to sign up. And then an hour before the tournament, you can click to check in and say, like, officially, yes, I'm here. more people can sign up than there are brackets for, and they just go into a waiting pool or, you know, a queue. Like, if people no-show, they've got people to fill in and step into those slots. And then, you know, once the tournament starts, you just click one button to see who you're assigned to, friend them in the app or friend them in the game, play them. And, like, live, you can have the screen up in front of you and just – if you win, you click I won. If you lose, you click I lost. And it shows you what the other person said happened. And it says, you know, so-and-so said that they won the game. Do you want to dispute or confirm? And, you know, when I lost my second game, it just very quickly said, like, so sorry, you're out of the tournament now. Try again later. But I imagine the cycle would have just repeated.
And you don't have any controlling interest in this. Recent stuff. Yeah, I just want to make sure.
No, I've found this site through Google. I have no connection to them whatsoever.
I just wanted to make sure that we address that.
No, that is very fair and self-aware and I think makes sense.
Yeah.
It could be that there's a billion sites like this and sites that do it better. This was just the first one I found.
It seems like it worked for you. Is that something that you're gonna do? Like, it doesn't sound like it's very time consuming, at least more so than just like running a bunch of Hearthstone stuff. Like you would anyway.
Yeah, no, it's not time consuming if you lose right away, that's for sure. But yeah, I like the idea of the tournament format a lot. And one of the major complaints about Hearthstone is there is no in-game client for it. So if there was ever an in-game facilitation of this, I would do it for sure. As is, I've gotten to the point where I seek it out and I had a positive experience, so I definitely see myself doing it again.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to go pro anytime soon, guys. But
I will. Have some...
Yeah, exactly. I will be a professional fun haver.
Aren't we all? Aren't we all? Very cool. Did you have anything else, Dennis?
Nah, that's me this week.
Okay. Ben, how about you?
So the one notch I have on my belt is I was able to beat Mad Max this weekend, so that was good. And I 100% the map, but I have some lingering missions that I haven't completed yet. So it's close to being 100% done. I'll probably finish it off at some point over the next week. The narrative's just okay. Like, I don't think like the narrative's too terribly strong, the same way that like Just Cause, the narrative's okay, but it's not too terribly strong. But, I mean, the world is still really awesome. The upgrade system is also really awesome. That's something that's much better than Just Cause, and the fighting system's really good. So I think it's a really polished game. I really like it. I think, you know, if it had, like, a stronger narrative, I definitely think it would have been, like, Game of the Year material for sure.
I mean, you have bumped it considerably up my list in terms of things that I at least want to sink, like, 5 hours into.
Yeah, I think it's totally worth that amount of time, like, to at least, like, explore the world and, like, get through, like, the starting area into like the larger map, I think it's totally worth your time.
Yeah. And that's like that's a game we laughed about like way back when it was first announced at that E3 event. It was just like a small little trailer before we knew that like Mad Max Fury Road was just going to be the best thing.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely felt like a cash grab because it was coming out the same time, same-ish time that the movie was coming out, right?
Yeah. And, it was initially slated to or something like that.
Yeah. So I think it was more of a kind of probability stance that we took on it or of what the game would be like. But yeah, I think it definitely has risen above the expectations of it. So,
do you have any like ridiculous story of like some kind of cool little emergent thing that happens in the end game kind of area or even leading up to it? Like, I know this is the Just Cause guys, and I wonder if they have given any opportunity for that to happen.
Yeah, the tone is not as like wacky like Just Cause is. Like, definitely some of the characters are, like, campy and stuff, but I think more of, like, the satisfaction of it is, like, so one of the mechanics, or one of the mission types of the game is there's convoys, which is basically, like, this like a group of heavily armored cars that will go around a set track in the map. Mm-hmm. And there's, like, a
just burning gas.
Yeah, you know, gas town people just loving their gas. But there's like a head car that is like your target essentially, and if you take out the car, you get a ornament for your car, and so it's like you can put accessories on your car, some of which include like a baby doll's head, which is like from The Road Warrior, or like a tricycle, half of a tricycle you can put on the front of it, whatever. But
grim.
That's definitely one of the coolest missions, though, because like at the start of it, it's really hard to do. Like a lot of times, like you'll have like maybe 6 or 7 people who are also like protecting this lead car, and they'll just come and attack you, whether that's like people jumping on your car or them trying to explode your car or whatever. But by the end of the game, like you've built everything up so well that you're just like surgically taking out everybody like quickly. And then like, I don't know, it's a really solid feeling. So there's a really good sense of progression in the game. So, yeah. Any other questions about the game?
No, it sounds like you've enjoyed it, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
Good game to go with a great movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Other than that, I haven't done a whole lot. I played Rocket League, but that's kind of old hat. There's a new map that they added in October, which is an underwater map, whatever. I've also watched a lot of games this week. So I watched Dennis play some of XCOM 2, which I had not seen before. So that was pretty cool. And then I watched him play some Dark Souls, I believe. Was that the DLC that you were playing?
That was the DLC. You saw me fight the really frustrating boss.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. Then, yeah, I witnessed that. And then I watched another friend not on the podcast play Stardew Valley, and that was pretty interesting. So have you guys, I know I talked about Stardew Valley like maybe 6 months ago or so.
Yeah, I feel terrible that I haven't played it.
Why is that?
Oh, I don't know. It just seems really nice. Like, and I know that I received it as a gift, I think, at some point. I believe from John. And just it's just one of those ones I haven't gotten around to.
Don't worry about it.
Because of the senseless way in which I live my life. Yeah. So is that a fun game to watch, or is it more just kind of like I'm hanging out and listening to somebody talk about their rhubarbs?
Yeah, I wasn't really sure what to expect. It was more like I was eating lunch and I wanted to watch something, so he was playing it, so I ended up watching it. But this is a guy who also is like really into StarCraft, so he's definitely kind of that mindset when he approaches a game. So it was really interesting seeing like another setup of somebody's like house and how they like plot out the field and like what they do on a day-to-day basis. So like one of the interesting things is he's much more into like fishing and catching fishes, like because you have like maybe like 4 main tools. Like you have a fishing rod, an axe to chop down trees, you have a pickaxe to like mine and do rocks, and then you have I think like a hoe and a scythe, but you can upgrade these. There's like 4 or 5 different tiers for each of these. So I think on my game, I think the pickaxe, I had it completely upgraded. So that was like platinum or diamond or whatever. He, on the other hand, upgraded his fishing rod completely. And like, that was more of his emphasis. But it was very like surgical the way he was doing things every day. So that was very interesting. This is also his second run through of the game. So apparently on his first run through, he claimed to have been making $10 million a week on the first game that he played. So yeah. So,
wow.
Very, very far above my level of play. So it was interesting to see that, but yeah.
Nice.
Yep. That's about all I got.
Very cool. Well, that sounds like a show.
It does sound like it should be a show.
Would we want to button it up, would you say?
But buttons.
Okay. That was level number 169. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. By way of admin kind of stuff, if you haven't seen it yet, there will be soon some announcements about the Patreon. We're going to be shifting things around again, like we do about every 6 months or so, with the goal being to provide more value to more people, and also kind of focus our efforts on stuff that will, again, do the same. So watch for that if it hasn't happened yet. Otherwise, know that it's coming down the pike. It's not exactly a secret, but I think what you're going to see will be very exciting. Jala, Dennis, you've seen it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty exciting. That is patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Otherwise, specifically for this show, it's been a little while since we've gotten a review. I know that both Ben and I have birthdays coming up. So if you want to get us anything, a review of this show, especially if you're a new listener, which we have a lot of, go for it.
Don't you love us?
Yeah. Like
us, right?
I understand iTunes isn't the best thing to work with, but, if you can hold your nose for it and go in for just a moment, it actually really does make a big difference for us in terms of visibility for the show. Otherwise,
or they could leave a spooky review and be seasonal.
Oh, yeah, true. leave a spooky review. If you leave a spooky review, the review that is sufficiently funny, I will read it on the air.
How's that sound?
But otherwise, there's Facebook, which you mentioned earlier, facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Thank you for understanding about some recent hiccups in the RSS feed. I've been doing a tremendous amount of work on the back end here, across the network. But all of the old shows that used to be unavailable on the RSS feed are now forcibly available. Some of you, it downloaded all of them. I am sorry. We are at a new website, at least temporarily, until the host realigns. That is thelevelpodcast.com. The old links will still kind of forward to the appropriate place. But yeah, just Google for us. You'll find us. Don't worry. Don't even trip. Don't worry about it. But am I missing anything?
No.
Okay.
Don't think so.
I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
Always Jala Chen in places.
Sometimes Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Only like once a year.
Yeah, twice a year.
Twice a year.
You might be due for the 6 months.
Yeah.
That might be true.
And stick around for some titles.
I have tweet block.
No, okay. I was going to say it's like an application that closes Twitter. So it was kind of a dry one for me this time. I wonder if you guys have any.
I got some.
Okay, Jala, go.
Okay, recursive gator.
Okay.
And Ranka.
Okay, and Ranka, like a Final Fantasy.
No, and Ranka. And rank ga.
Okay.
So, stage 4 ringworm. Go numb to goofiness.
Okay.
And professional fun haver.
Okay.
That's it.
I had professional fun haver as well.
Okay.
I had professional something because I didn't write it down in time, and I started to write professional, but not the last part. I had swing voter go ... to the polls. I had face wet and Ranka. I had where'd your shirt go, homie? And I
And I have, if it makes you feel better, she dies.
Okay, one second. I need to write that down because it's a novel.
Yeah.
Dennis, what'd you have?
Just the, where is it? I was,
oh,
professional fun haver.
Yeah. And I had in Rankin. Stage 4 Ringworm really made me laugh, but professional fun haver seemed like it had the most votes by way of things that people picked out. So do you want to go with that?
Yeah, I like professional fun haver.
Okay, there we go.
It works.
Cool.
It's done.
So it is. Awesome. Well, I'm going to go and fall over into bed as quickly as possible. How's that sound?
Don't hurt yourself.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a rest.
Into bed. Like, not against a coffee table.
So. Well, yeah, but like, you know, there's still falling involved, and you could bounce off and have some kind of epic, you know, like epic fail to get into bed. That would be like the best ever. I mean, it wouldn't be the best ever, but I mean, it would be the best from over here.
My neighbor would notice the blood stain seeping down. It'd be fine. Head blood goes through floors really quickly. Okay.
That is all. Good night.
Good night, everybody. Dark. Take care.
Yep. Bye.
All right. Night, guys.
Bye.